Well, the other day we had a friend of ours that we met here in town come to us and wanted to attend a meeting, and so he did. He attended a meeting one time, and the one comment that I remember he made was, "Boy, you sure dig into the Old Testament a lot." And I said to him, "Well, why not? Two-thirds of the Bible is the Old Testament, only one-third's the New." "Yeah," but he said, "you get into all these rules and laws and so on." And I have thought about that, and I guess maybe it's true. But on the other hand, I said to him, "Well, what do you think is the most important thing in the Bible?" And, of course, he said, "J.C., And, of course, he knew that we didn't believe that the name Jesus should be used at all. It should be Yahshua. But anyway, I got talking to him a little bit more. One of the things that he didn't really like was I mentioned that some of the patterns in the Old Testament are to teach us some things, some truth in the New. And, of course, he didn't really know what I meant, and I didn't want to get into it too much. But I thought today I might talk about what I would have told him if I didn't want to offend him. I don't think I'll offend any of you, but if any new people are listening, they might be offended. But I hope not. I'm not trying to pick on anybody. All I'm trying to say is there are many things in the Bible that people are neglecting, overlooking, not taking cognizance of, just ignoring. But I want to talk about the patterns that are in the Old Testament are carried over in the New, and today's churches don't even realize what they're doing. Let's begin by going over to 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 16. In chapter 16, beginning there in verse 29, we read about a king called Ahab. And you find there in verse 29, it says, "And in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel and Samaria for 2 years and 22 years. And then we know in verse 30, it says, "And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of Yahweh above all that were before him." In other words, there was nobody that was any worse than he was. Up to that point, he was the worst. "And it came to pass, as it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him." Most people say Baal, but actually should be Baal. Notice what he did now, Ahab. "He reared up an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he had built in Samaria. And Ahab made a grove. And Ahab did more to provoke Yahweh Elohim of Israel to anger than all the kings of Israel that were before him. And in his days, did Hiel the Bethelite build Jericho and laid the foundation of thereof in Abraham his firstborn and set up gates thereof." I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there was a curse said that if anyone would rebuild Jericho, that they would lose their firstborn son. And this is what happened. This is what it's talking about. But anyway, Jericho is supposed to be a monument to the ways of Yahweh and how when the walls fell down and everything, that his power was greater than any city. He could take any city he wanted by simply having the walls all fall down. But you notice here, it talks about that and about the curse that was put on him. But I don't want to dwell on that. Let's go over to the 17th chapter now that we're here. Here we have the introduction to a man named Elijah. His name, of course, means "My mighty one is Yah." And really, this is the message that has to go out before the Savior returns. Malachi chapter 4 and verse 5 says that he will send Elijah the prophet before that great and terrible day of Yahweh. So here we have Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, "As Yahweh Elohim, mighty one of Israel, lives, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years according to my word." So now he says there's going to be a drought coming on this country. And of course the drought did come. And he goes on to explain all what's going to happen and so on. In verse 8, the word of Yahweh came to him and told Elijah to go to Zarephath, which belonged to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain you. So he has chosen, Yahweh chose a woman to bring him food and drink and so on. But notice in verse 10 it says, "And so when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering of sticks. And he called out to her and said, Fetch me, I pray you, a little water in a vessel that I may drink. And as she was going to fetch it, he called her and said, Bring me, I pray you, a morsel of bread in your hand." Just a handful of bread, something to eat. And she said, "As Yahweh," notice, "your Elohim lives, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in a barrel, a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks that I may go and dress them, or dress it for me and my son, that we may eat and die." So this was the last of her food that she had. And here Elijah wants a meal from it. So in verse 13 he tells her, don't worry about it. "Go and do as you have said, and make me thereof a little cake first. Bring it unto me, and after make for yourself and your son. For thus says Yahweh, mighty one of Israel, the barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall a cruse of oil fail, until the day that Yahweh sends rain upon the earth." And so anyway, he does that, and he's taken care of. But the point I want to make here is that the big drought is on the land, and Elijah is being taken care of. He's actually kind of hidden there in the land of the Zidons. Now we have, in fact, the boy actually dies, verse 17, "that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick, and his sickness was so sore that there was no breath left in him. And she said to Elijah, What have I to do with you, O man of Elohim? Are you come to call my sin to remembrance and slay my son? And he said unto her, Give me your son. And so he took him out of her bosom and carried him into a loft. There he abode and laid him on his own bed," and so on. Anyway, he brought him back to life and with the prayer that he made in verse 21. And so she gave him back, or she got her son back. Now let's move on to what we're really going to get into in chapter 18. It was the third year in verse 1, and Elijah is told to go and show himself to Ahab, the king, and rain will come. So this is what he was supposed to do. But notice here, Ahab, verse 2, "Elijah went to show himself unto Ahab, and there was a sore famine in Samaria. And Ahab called Obadiah, which was the governor of his house." It says, "Now Obadiah feared Yahweh greatly, for it was so when Jezebel cut off the prophets of Yahweh that Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50 in a cave, and he fed them water, or bread and water." So he had 50 in each cave, and there were 100 of them. So that tells us right there that Ahab and Jezebel had gotten rid of all the prophets of Yahweh and had their own prophets. They had the 450 for the prophets and 400 for Jezebel. So they actually had 850 that we know of. Anyway, this Obadiah, for the word Obadiah means servant of Yah. So this man was taking care of these 100 of Yahweh's priests. Now, as we continue on, Ahab is, in verse 5, Ahab is trying to find some grass so he can feed his horses and the animals. He said, maybe we'll find some grass we can feed these beasts so they won't all starve to death. So they divided the land between them and decided in verse 6 how they're going to go one way. Ahab was going and Obadiah went the other way. Obadiah, on his way in verse 7, met Elijah. And so he said, are you Elijah? And he said, yes, I am. And now he's really worried because he knows that if he doesn't get Elijah to go and report to Ahab, that Ahab will probably kill him, kill Obadiah. So he says in verse 11, go tell your master, behold, Elijah is here. And it shall come to pass, as soon as I am gone from you, that the Spirit of Yahweh will carry you whither I know not. And so when I come and tell Ahab, he cannot find you, he shall slay me. But I, thy servant, fear Yahweh from my youth. Was it not told my master what I did when Jezebel slew the prophets of Yahweh, how I hid 100 men of Yahweh's prophets by 50 in a cave, and I fed them bread and water? Now you tell me to go and tell Ahab that Elijah is here, Elijah is here, he shall slay me. Well, it doesn't happen. But anyway, we have, I don't want to take a lot of time with this, but notice in verse 17 that Ahab saw Elijah and he said, are you the one that's troubled Israel? And Elijah said, I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house, in that you have forsaken the commandments of Yahweh and have followed Baalim, the Baals. Now therefore, send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel and the prophets of Baal, 450, and the prophets of the groves, 400, which eat at Jezebel's table. So Jezebel had her own priest, her own priest for her pagan religion. And there were 450, actually a total of 850 altogether. So they all gathered together. In verse 21, Elijah came unto and said unto all the people, how long halt ye between two opinions? Some versions read, how long do you jump back and forth between two opinions? How long are you going to limp along between two different religions? Basically is what he's asking. If Yahweh be Elohim, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word. The point here, of course, I'm trying to make is that it is here where we have a king who is supposed to be the ruler of Israel, and actually what he's doing is following along with his wife Jezebel and getting into a lot of pagan stuff, and he's going back and forth trying to bring them together. In fact, it's called syncretism, synchronizing two religions together. I hope you can understand what we're getting into here, because what we're going to see is that they try to meld two religions, and we see that today in our churches, don't we? There are days that they keep that are not mentioned in the Bible at all, but that's what they do. Notice what happened. We're going to see some more of these. I don't want to take a lot of time, but should read verse 23 and 24 so we understand what's going on. Elijah says, let them therefore give us two bullocks, and let them choose one bullock for themselves. So Elijah lets Ahab and his group select the one that they want, and they're to cut it in pieces, lay it on wood, and put no fire under it. And I will dress the other bullock and lay it on wood and put no fire under it. Then call you on the name of your mighty ones. Notice that's plural. There's more than one. And I will call on the name, singular, of Yahweh. And the one Elohim that answers by fire, let him be the mighty one. And the people answered and said, it is well spoken. You said a mouthful. We'll do it. So Elijah said unto the prophets of Baal, choose you one bullock for yourselves and put no fire, and so on. And verse 26, they start in, And he dressed it and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, hear us. But there was no voice nor anything that answered. And they leaped upon the altar which they made. And they said, well, maybe we're not close enough to him. So they got up on top of the altar. And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud, for he is a mighty one. Either he is talking, or he is pursuing, or he's on a journey, or maybe he's sleeping and you're going to have to wake him up. And they cried and cut themselves after manner with knives and lancets till the blood gushed out upon them. So you see, a shedding of blood was supposed to bring a swift answer, because they're shedding blood. They mean business. They're not playing games. They're willing to shed blood, which was supposed to be a sign they're willing to die for this if necessary. Verse 29, it came to pass when midday was past, they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, Ben Ha'arbim. And there it was, neither no voice to answer nor anything that was regarded. Then Elijah said unto the people, come near unto me. And the people came near. And he repaired the altar of Yahweh that was broken down. You notice that Yahweh's altar wasn't even in operation. The stones had fallen down. Nobody put them back together again. But they had the one for Baal and the prophets of the grove. And that was their going full blast. So in verse 31, Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, unto the word of Yahweh came, saying, Israel shall be thy name. And with the stones he built an altar in the name of Yahweh. He made a trench about the altar, as great as would contain 2 measures of seed. And he put the wood in order, and cut the bullock in pieces, and laid it on the wood. And then he said, fill 4 barrels with water, and pour it on the burnt sacrifice and on the wood. There's always a question, where'd that water come from? They had a drought, and now he's supposed to get a bunch of water. Well, they weren't that far from the sea, so they didn't have any trouble getting the water. So he said, do it a second time. So they dumped four barrels of water. And then he said, do it again. So they have 8 barrels of water they poured on the sacrifice. And they did it the third time, we find in verse 34. And the water ran round the altar, and he filled the trench also with water. Remember reading one time somewhere that actually what this was kerosene. And that's what it was. But anyway, somebody tries to get around the miracles that Yahweh can perform. Anyway, in verse 36, at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, that Elijah the prophet came near and said, Yahweh, mighty one of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are the mighty one in Israel, that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at your word. Hear me, O Yahweh, hear me. This people may know that you are Yahweh, Elohim, and that you have turned their heart back again. Then the fire of Yahweh fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice, the wood, the stones, the dust, licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their face and said, Yahweh, he is the Elohim. Yahweh, he is the Elohim. So they admitted it. And then verse 40, you probably know what happened. Elijah said, take the prophets of Baal, let not one of them escape. And they took them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. So they killed off the prophets of the Baal. Well, I don't want to take any more time on this, because the rain finally comes. But this was the problem of Israel, always mixing religions. And if you don't believe that, this syncretism goes on and on. Notice here in the... let's go to 2 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 17. In 2 Kings chapter 17, move on down to verse 29. What this really is a replacement of the Israelites that were in Samaria with the people from other lands, and they move into this place and they're made citizens of this place. And this was all done by their enemy, of course. because they had not been faithful. And so we find that the king of Assyria replaced the Israelites that were there, and these people were brought back in. Verse 29, let's get down there. We find there that every nation made deities of their own and put them in the houses of the high places. You find there the bunch of places they came from. That's in verse 24. They came from Kattath, from Abba, from Hanna, from Hamath, from Sepharvaim, and the cities of Samaria, and so on. So they came from all over, and they all had their own deities that they worshipped. And so they came to the moved into the land of Samaria, and every nation that they that came from, they had their own deities. Verse 30, and the men of Babylon made Succoth-Benoth, and the men of Cuth made Nergal, and the men of Hamath made Ashima, and the Avites made Nibhaz and Tartuk, and the Sepharvites burnt their children in fire to Adrammelech and Anammelech, the deities of Sepharvaim. So here we have even burning their children in the fire, sacrificing on them, just like they did with Marduk. Verse 32. Notice it says they feared Yahweh. They feared Yahweh and made themselves the lowest of the lowest men, priests of the high places, which sacrificed for them in the houses of the high places. They were not following Yahweh by having the priests from the tribe of Levi. In fact, it doesn't say that. It says they just took the lowest men, the ones that they could get to do it, and they made them the priest. And in verse 33, they feared Yahweh and served their own deities. Syncretism, mixed pagan beliefs, sacrificing children. If you ever try to get somebody to understand this, ask them where Xmas came from or Easter. Pagan deities, worshiping pagans, and you bring this in and baptize these days, and now they're supposed to be Christian holy days. Every one of them is a pagan background. But they feared Yahweh and served their own deities after the manner of the nations whom they carried away from thence. So they tried to worship Yahweh by taking pagan practices and think Yahweh ought to be happy with that. Unto this day they do after the former manners. They fear not Yahweh, neither do they do after their statutes or after their ordinances or after Yahweh's law and commandments, which Yahweh commanded the children of Jacob when he named Israel, with whom Yahweh made a covenant and charged them, saying, you shall not fear other deities, nor bow yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them. But Yahweh, who brought you out of the land of Egypt with great power and a stretched out arm, him ye shall fear, and him shall you worship, and to him you shall do sacrifice. And to the statutes and ordinances and the law and the commandments which he wrote for you, you shall observe to do forevermore. You shall not fear other deities. And the covenant that I have made with you shall not forget, neither shall you fear other deities. But Yahweh, your Elohim, you shall fear, and he shall deliver you out of the hand of all your enemies. Howbeit, they did not hearken, but they did after their former manner. It didn't do any good. Verse 41 summarizes the chapter. So the nations feared Yahweh and served their graven images, both their children and their children's children, as did their fathers, so do they unto this day. So here we have them mixing religions, syncretism, and they do it all the time. In fact, this is one of the big problems that they have. Let's go over to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 19. You find that all the way through, it was the syncretism that gave them the problem. Jeremiah 19. I don't want to spend a lot of time with all of these, but notice here in chapter 19, And verse 13, we're in Jeremiah 19, verse 13. And the houses of Jerusalem and the houses of the kings of Judah shall be defiled as a place of Tophet, because all the houses upon whose roofs have burned incense to the host of heaven and have poured out drink offerings unto other deities. So they take what Yahweh tells them to do, to have burnt offerings and the drink offerings, and instead of giving them to him, they give them to the pagan deities. So Jeremiah scolds them for it. And, of course, Tophet is the name for the Valley of Hinnom that was turned into a garbage dump is what it was. But it used to be where the big grinning deity was with a big wide open mouth, and they built a fire in back of him. And threw their babies down this grinning mouth of the fire was. And the babies would scream and holler and screech. But they burned them alive. And so they wouldn't hear the screeching, where they used to have a kind of a band there. And they'd play louder and louder to cover up the screams of the kids. And they're doing the same thing. And yet they don't see it. They don't see what they're doing. Giving the children the wrong ideas. And in our nation here, most of the young kids don't grow up knowing anything about the Bible at all. They grow up knowing all about the baseball players, and all about the football players, know about basketball and sports, know about the movies, but they don't even know the names of some of the prophets. I want you to turn now to the 32nd chapter of Jeremiah. Jeremiah has written a lot of things here that are prophetic, and yet throughout the scripture he always brings in some word that we look at and things that we want to look at. In chapter 32, move down to verse 26, where there we read, "The word of Yahweh came unto Jeremiah, saying, Behold, I am Yahweh, the mighty one of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? Thus says Yahweh, Behold, I will give this city into the land of the Chaldeans, and into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall take it." Well, why is that? Well, notice in verse 29, "And the Chaldeans that fight against this city shall come and set fire to this city, and burn it with the houses upon whose roofs they have offered incense to Baal, and poured out drink offerings unto other deities. And they provoke me to anger. For the children of Israel and the children of Judah have only done evil before me from their youth. And the children of Israel have only provoked me to anger with the work of their hands, says Yahweh. For the city hath been to me as a provocation of my anger, and my fury from the day they built it, even unto this day, that I should remove it from before my face. Because of the evil of all the children of Israel and the children of Judah, which they have done to provoke me to anger, their kings, their princes, their priests, and the prophets, and the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem." It isn't just a few people, it's the whole nation is turned against Yahweh. They just let off so easily. They don't want to stay with truth. And they want to try out and see what somebody else is doing. And you find here in verse 33, "They have turned unto me the back and not the face, though I taught them, rising up early and teaching them, yet they have not hearkened or received my instructions. But they set their abominations in the house which is called by my name to defile it." You notice that? It's a house that's called by Yahweh's name. And they defile it, and they build high places of Baal, which are in the valley of the son of Hinnom. That's the same as Tophet, actually. But the valley of Hinnom, of course, is where the garbage dump is. "To cause their sons and daughters to pass through the fire into Moloch." This is a fire we were talking about. It was that big grinning statue made out of pottery. And he had a big grinning in the back that was built a fire down below, and the fire came belching out of his mouth, and he threw these babies in there. This is what he's talking about. be unto Moloch, which I commanded them not, neither came it into my mind that they should do this abomination to cause Judah to sin. So it's not everlasting punishment. It was Judah sinned. But he talks now about the future and so on and so forth. Let's go to the book of Isaiah, chapter 48. Back up a little bit here. But this syncretism is carried on even today. And I think you can recognize it when you read the Old Testament. And like I said, there's two-thirds of the Bible is the Old Testament, and the lessons are there. But people read it, and it doesn't register with them at all. That they are doing the same thing today when they have pagan customs like Halloween, and they bring it in the church, and they dress up like goblins, like Satan's trusted people. And then they also have the kids going out and saying, tricks or treats. If you don't pay me, I'll do something here. I'll mark up your windows. Used to be in the farms, they'd go out and tip over the toilets outside, you know. And that was their trick. But today they still go around threatening people to do something if you don't pay them off. I don't know how kids can learn to be just and right when the parents are actually teaching them to go out and threaten somebody and have kind of a payoff by threats. Well, anyway, chapter 48. Hear you this, O house of Jacob, verse 1, which are called by my name of Israel, and are come forth out of the waters of Judah, which swear by the name of Yahweh, and make mention of the Mighty One of Israel, but not in truth or righteousness. So they use Yahweh's name, but don't really follow through with what he is talking about, what he wants them to do. And he goes on in this 48th chapter and says some of the things that he's going to do. For example, he says, they call themselves of the holy city and say themselves upon the Mighty One of Israel. Yahweh of hosts is his name. I have declared the former things from the beginning, and they went forth out of my mouth, and I showed them. I did them suddenly, and they came to pass. Because I knew that you are a stubborn, you're an obstinate people, and your neck is an iron sinew, and your brow is brass. In other words, you're stubborn. He calls them stiff-necked. And sometimes being stubborn, if you have truth, that's good. Stay with it. Don't go jumping off and halt between two opinions, this or that. Make up your mind what is true and follow it. Find out what Yahweh says. Verse 5, he says, I have even from the beginning declared it to you. Before it came to pass, I showed it to you. Lest you should say, mine idol hath done them, my graven image and my molten image hath commanded them. You see, they can't actually say that it's Yahweh's fault. They all always turn and, you know, it's my graven image made me do this. And all, always trying to circumvent the responsibility to Yahweh, trying to blame it on something else. Well, he goes on to say in verse 6, have you seen all this? Won't you declare it? I have showed you things from this time, even hidden things, that you did not know them. They are created now, but not from the beginning, even now, the day that you heard them, lest you should say, behold, I know everything. I want to say they're wise and everything and know all these things. Well, he goes on and he talks about in verse 9, for my name's sake, I will defer mine anger, and for my praise, I will refrain for thee, that I cut thee not off. Some people wonder why did Yahweh take the people out of the land and have them go to Babylon as captives. Well, let's go over to the book of Second Chronicles. Second Chronicles is the last chapter. And you find there in chapter 36, he tells us why he removed Judah out of the land and they went to Babylon. Because they were not obeying him. They were not doing what he wanted them to do. In chapter 36, he talks in here about the... let's skip down to verse 14. He says, moreover, all the chief of the priests and the people transgressed very much after all the abominations of the heathen. They started doing what the heathen did, and they felt they were serving Yahweh. They do things that the pagans did, and the first thing you know, they were doing it and thinking in their mind, well, Yahweh, this isn't what you want me to do. I know I shouldn't worship on Sunday, but it's so much easier on Sunday, and you better be happy with that, because I'm not going to change to Saturday. That's tough, because it's hard to get a job. You have to work on Saturday. I'm going to keep Sunday a lot easier. You better be happy with that. That's about the attitude they have. I'm going to do it anyway. And this is what Yahweh hates. Notice here what he says. In verse 15, Yahweh Elohim of their fathers sent to them by messengers, rising up betimes and sending because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked the messengers of Elohim and despised his words and misused his prophets until the wrath of Yahweh rose up against his people, until there was no remedy. Therefore he brought upon them the king of the Chaldees, who slew their young men with the sword. Talking about the Babylonians that came under Nebuchadnezzar and so on. Notice here, he had no compassion upon young man or maiden or old man or them that stooped for age. They all fell victim to the enemy. And all the vessels of the house of Elohim, great and small, and the treasures of the house of Yahweh and the treasures of the king and of the princes, all these he brought to Babylon. So here we have the king of Babylon taking all of Yahweh's sacred instruments and utensils, taking them all to Babylon. And they burnt the house of Elohim and break down the wall of Jerusalem and burnt down the palaces thereof with fire and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon. So they didn't all die, but he took a lot of them prisoner to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the king of Persia, to fulfill the word of Yahweh by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths. For as long as she lay desolate, she kept the Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. They had not kept the sabbatical jubilee years. So for 70 years they were taken captive and had to stay in Babylon. Finally they came back under Ezra and Nehemiah. But you notice that Yahweh's anger gets to the point where he can't stand it anymore, and finally he takes action. Finally he does something about it. And let's go over to the New Testament. I want to look at a couple here, mainly in chapter 6 of the book of Matthew. And you'll find here that Yahweh talks about serving, trying to serve more than one. In chapter 6, and notice here, move on down to in verse 21. He says, where your treasure is, we're in Matthew 6:21, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. For the light of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye be single, the whole body shall be full of light. So you can't look at more religions than the one that Yahweh gives us. That's the one we're supposed to be following. He talks about laying up treasures in heaven in verse 20. But notice, he says, if your eye be evil, the whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? Verse 24, no man can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve Yahweh and mammon. Mammon means riches. Some people get so wrapped up in the world they don't have time to serve Yahweh. They're so wrapped up they don't even think of doing what Yahweh wants us to do. Well, my whole point, of course, is that we have examples in the Old Testament telling what Israel did wrong. Disobeyed Yahweh. They used pagan ways, picked up pagan customs, took pagan habits, and used them to worship Yahweh. And he doesn't like that. He tells us over and over again to do it his way. And so I think that when we finally come to the point where we recognize that all the commandments should be obeyed, including the third and fourth, keeping his name, knowing his name, calling upon his name, and the third commandment, keeping the Sabbath that he has set aside for his worship, are things we should be doing. And we can see that in the Old Testament, that mixing false religion, pagan religions, with his religion is not at all what he likes. And I hope that more and more people will come to understand some of the deeper things of Yahweh's word, that we are to keep his commandments, all 10 of them. They are not multiple choice. We keep them all. That includes his name.